Hi, this is Daniel Garber, the movies for culturalmining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. Poor Abner. He was once a successful sculptor and a popular art prof, in love with a beautiful girl, best friends with his brother, a bearded bohemian high on life. Now he's a total wreck, lonely and depressed, working as a doorman in a monkey suit. How did he sink into this pit of despair and degradation? Can he claw his way back out, or will he just end up ending it all right here? So asks a new comedy called It Was You, Charlie. It's a first feature film by FilmFest favorite writer-director Emmanuel Sharinian and stars rising comic actor and ACTRA Awards nominee Michael D. Cohen as Abner. The movie opens today in Toronto, and I'm very pleased to have Emmanuel and Michael here with me in studio to tell us more about it. Hi, Emmanuel. Hi, Michael.
Hi. Hey, thank you so much for having us.
So let's dive right into the story. Why is Abner so depressed?
Well, Abner's got a few reasons. I mean, he's lost the girl that he loves to his brother, his younger, more, shall we say, debonair brother, played by Aaron Abrams. And also, he was in a car accident that was quite devastating and hasn't quite gotten over that.
So he has in his apartment a diorama. He's a sculptor, yes. But now he just seems to devote his skills to a tiny diorama of the accident itself. Why does it haunt him so much?
You know, it's weird. He has this, he suffers, very few people suffer from this, perhaps, but he has this tremendous amount of guilt for surviving the accident. There was a victim in the other car. And instead of kind of embracing the second chance he was given, he kind of withdraws from the world and tries to piece together the accident with his diorama you're talking about, as to if there was any possible way he could have avoided it in some way. So he's very consumed by this guilt that is kind of eating away at his soul.
And even though it has a dark side to the movie, also has a very bright, optimistic streak as well, personified by Zoe, played by Emma Fleury, who's a cab driver.
Yes.
Could you talk about her odd relationship with Abner?
Well, she is this glowing, effervescent presence that appears just when he needs it most, and really is in many ways his heart and his vitality. And as he follows that part of himself and Zoe, he finds redemption and he finds his way back into the light, I suppose you could say.
She kind of helps him resolve his conflicted past. She's kind of, I envisioned her as I was writing her, this kind of Capra-esque character, if you will, this very benevolent character, full of light. And she just provided a bit of levity in an otherwise kind of a somber film.
And this is a Canadian film, no doubt, but to me somehow it has an older, almost like Eastern European tone to the whole thing. It feels like it takes place in an apartment in Moscow.
Oh, wow.
So what inspired this dark comedy?
What inspired the story?
Yeah.
And the
whole movie.
The look, yeah. Well, I'm happy you brought up the tone and the look of the film. Yeah, it does have a bit of, I've been told it has a bit of a European sensibility to it. The story, you know, it's, I've always been fascinated by the theme of family. Family dynamics has been a big part of my work, my short films, but I never really explored the two brothers' relationship. So that was kind of the starting point, and I was very much influenced by the kind of tumultuous relationships of the brothers in East of Eden and Raging Bull and On the Waterfront, these kind of films. So that became the catalyst, thinking about Abner and his brother Tom. And then the car accident manifested from that. And from there, I kind of worked backwards. But what was interesting about the film, I think, is what Michael and I really enjoyed about it was structurally, you know, the film takes place over a 24-hour period, but it spans 3 years. So it's kind of this very epic film, but told in a very kind of intimate way. And the photography and you talk about is shot by Luc Montpellier, and we worked really hard at kind of shooting in a very wide aspect ratio to kind of accentuate the vulnerability and the loneliness that Abner is engulfed in.
And because it is a sad movie, at this core, it also has a sad element to it. But at the same time, partly the way you filmed it, it's a little bit comic book-like, a little bit.
Yeah.
So there's almost a funniness in it. How do you
there's
how do you
a bit of magic
combine
realism.
The two?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We call it an unrequited love story mixed with a bit of a psychological thriller. How we achieve that, I have to say it was really tough on the page, let alone executing, with filmmaking. I don't know. It does have a bit of a magic realism element, would you say, Michael? Like it's
yeah.
The score, and also the music lends itself. We have a score that is very kind of The Shining like. There's also this very nice kind of romantic, melodic jazz when we go back to the past. We're constantly juxtaposing past and present. The present is much more dark and austere. And
I think the way an analogy for this is that it's like a musical piece that's 80 minutes long that keeps changing key. But you still stay within the same flavor and tone. The tone never shifts, but there's a key change. And then, so it'll go into physical comedy and it'll come back down. And it's always balanced out, so that there's, it never stays dark for that long, because then we come back out. And so the audience, I've never heard anybody say, that was so sad, that was so hard. It's not a hard movie to watch.
No.
It's just that it takes you to all sorts of different emotional places.
I'm speaking with writer-director Manuel Sherinian and actor Michael D. Cohen about their new film, It Was You, Charlie. Okay, so you're talking about magic realism, but sort of riffing on that, at times in your new film, It Was You, Charlie, the narrator appears to be unreliable to the viewer. So it's sort of an unreliable narrator. We see everything filtered through Abner's character. Mm-hmm. Through his eyes. So without any major spoilers, of course, tell me about the concept of unreliable narrator in a film.
That's interesting. Yeah.
I'm trying to process that question, what exactly that would mean, an unreliable.
When you watch a movie, you usually expect everything you see to be true and real and as is. But because we're seeing the movie through one of the character's eyes, there's a possibility that not everything may be what it is.
I think a lot of in the film doesn't appear to be what it be. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a very much a character-driven film. We see the story through Abner's lens. But it was very important to kind of, and that's, I think what you're asking is attributed to the car accident and the kind of piecing together memory. Mm-hmm. So it gave me a lot of leverage, I think, and we had a lot of liberty in kind of playing with hallucinations, what is real, what is just a figment of Abner's imagination. The detective, for instance, was perhaps a figment of an imagination. We're not quite sure. There's a lot of ambiguity in it.
There is.
I think it also speaks to how we work as human beings, because, everybody has a different lens, a different pair of glasses on how they see the world. So who is the actual reliable narrator in the world? I mean, there is none. We all have our perspectives and our point of view, and I think this film speaks to that. And then also how the mind can heal itself. Mm-hmm. How we see what we need to see in order to bring it up and look at it and move on.
Michael,
yeah.
When the movie begins, Abner seems like a wimp, a nebbish, a loser. it's hard to feel complete sympathy for the character, right? He's a total wreck, a total loser. But as it goes on, how do you add three dimensions to the character after the opening? After the opening introduction to him?
Tell us, loser. I think it's really not about thinking about it in terms of, okay, this is the opening, this is the whatever. It's just thinking the whole way through what's happening, what's authentic and truthful for this character in this moment. What's he really going through? So I'm not really thinking, what impact am I trying to make on the audience here? I'm thinking, okay, I'm in this moment. What is this like for me as Abner? And then hopefully if I'm doing a good job at that, then it will have the end result of, being three-dimensional. Because nobody is two-dimensional. We're all multidimensional human beings. So if I think in those terms as much as possible for the character, then the result will be a three-dimensional character. I'm hoping that's my goal. Mm-hmm. And then, you put it in the hands of the editor and the director, and then they make sure that happens too. It's a team effort.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there are. I've been doing a lot of press with this film. They mentioned him as an unsympathetic character, and
initially, I think he's unsympathetic.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the way he attacks his brother, but I think the brother relationship is really complex. And I think the film alludes to past indiscretions, if you will, between the two of them, and we don't quite touch on it so much in the film. But you could tell Abner's heartbreak and his hurt comes from a place of honesty. There's some integrity in what Abner's saying. The beautiful thing about it is Abner is so consumed by his own kind of psychological I'm not quite sure what to say, but that he's not really listening to what his brother's saying. And his brother's telling him that he's changed and that Madeline is not just another conquest. As Abner says, you left a long trail of bleeding hearts over the years, and that's not who Tom is anymore. And it's a thing until Abner and Tom have that diner scene that, and Tom is married and has a kid with Madeline. And
well, I mean, you know, Abner's stuck in the past. And so because
Madeline is the woman Abner was in love with.
Yes, that my brother yeah. married. And so because I'm stuck in the past, I cannot fathom how anybody else can move on.
Right.
You know, it's this sort of narcissistic projection, right. You know. So,
But you managed to bring such sympathy to the character, Michael. I mean, there's a certain vulnerability. So for all the hardness you have, there's a real softness to Abner. And that's it's a testament to how expressive your face is and how you kind of just, you know, how you manipulate your emotions for the screen. I mean, it's a wonderfully complex performance. I really encourage people to see it because Michael literally is in pretty much 100% of the film. Every frame, his face is there. And yeah, I mean, it's amazing. For a little guy, you eat up a lot of scenery, man. You're really good.
Thank you.
So the whole story, you're Abner. Without Abner, there is no movie. The entire movie rests on your shoulder. So it's a great part for an actor. But what are the potential pitfalls when you carry the entire movie on your
head? Oh, my God. I think that's endless. I mean, you know, especially in a film like this where, of course, we're shooting out of sequence, like most films shoot. You rarely have the luxury of shooting in sequence. And because we're flashing back, going back and forward in time, and there's different levels of my paranoia as we get through the film. I mean, so I had everything charted out on my walls, like, you know, to make sure that I knew, okay, we're shooting this scene on this day, therefore I'm a 5 out of 10 on paranoia. And so it's about really tracking where I'm at in the arc, knowing, understanding what the arc is of the character, what the story is, what the changes are, where the changes happen. I mean, I literally labored over when can Abner smile for the first time in the film. Like, I labored over that decision. And you know, and then...
It was a small smile.
It was a small smile. Yeah. Do you remember what scene it was?
Is this a quiz? I can
tell you because I remember laboring over it. It was the taxi Zoe in the telling the midget scene, whatever. Yep. That's not the little person. Scene. So and so that was the first being politically correct because you have to, you know, but that was the first time that there was that little smile, and that was intentional because, you know, when was he gonna, you know, and then. And was like, when is he going to laugh? When is he going to, you know, so all of that stuff. So that's the pitfall is, you know, if I don't pay attention to those details and I don't have details for everything, you know, then.
There's also something really remarkable about what you do is he does so much with very little. I mean, the board is a prop that we talk about, the diorama. But for the most part, you know, he's kind of on his own and sitting there pensive, introspective, thinking, but there's so much going on behind those eyes. And that's why my cinematographer and I really try to capture and execute as many close-ups as we could just to capture this face because it was so expressive. It said so much.
Yeah, you never have the voice of his mind narrating or anything like that.
No.
You're
no,
totally
no.
void of anything.
No,
like that.
And in fact, the film, I think, is void of dialogue in the first 15 minutes. You know, I was really interested in really exploiting the tools of cinema as we once knew it, you know, to tell the story and not rely so much on dialogue, but use photography and soundscape and, you know.
You could have done a completely straightforward narrative, sequential, chronological, but instead you choose to do a cut-up style, chopped up. I mean, you were talking about how it's filmed out of sequence.
Right.
But the film itself is shown in a very big mixture of the flashbacks and the present tense.
Right.
So what are the advantages and disadvantages of having a cut-up style?
Well, the disadvantages are you can be incredibly disorienting and lose the audience very quickly. Miraculously, with my editor, my composer, my cinematographer, myself, I think we found a really kind of lyrical way in kind of organic, seamlessly weaving these scenes from one into another, right? And without kind of drawing attention to, this is a flashback, we are now cutting to a year earlier. It was just, to be honest with you, in writing it, I was very aware that I was asking the audience to be kind of active participants in the viewing. You know, I wanted the audience to kind of work for it. So it could have failed. For the most part, people have enjoyed working for it.
No, I liked it a lot.
Yeah. It's funny, Michael, when we were in Korea premiering this film, people associated Abner's, people in the Q&A afterwards, people linked Abner's character. They asked me if I was influenced by Buster Keaton.
Oh, wow. Huh. Holy shit. I just got chills.
Yeah. And I was really fascinated by it. Wow. I mean, it's amazing.
You two do like your hats. I know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. But I think it was a silent comedy.
Oh, my gosh.
Look at Abner as Buster Keaton. I thought that was a real insightful remark. And I never thought of Buster
compliment.
Keaton. Yeah, a huge compliment. Huge compliment. But it's amazing how this film touched. I mean, this is in Korea. I mean, the film had. It's amazing how you reach different pockets of the world and how people interpret your film. So I've never heard of anyone mention Buster Keaton here in North America.
I want to speak to this for a second because one of the things, I mean, when Emmanuel and I first worked together, it was like an immediate synergy. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh my God, I have to work more with you. And we just could read each other. We could finish each other's sentences. We knew exactly what, and we just built on each, on, you know, the sum is greater than the whole is whatever. So I think part of that synergy is that we both kind of have this sort of classic sensibility. We love, like, you know, he's like so not technological, right? And he's just, and it's like you don't see cell phones in his
that's
work.
True. And yet it's definitely present day.
It's present day, but you see old school, you see classic 1940s kind of style. And I love that era. I feel like that's where I resonate. And the whole idea of silent film and all of that stuff, that's where I like to live. And so it's interesting that you got that reference. Yeah, that's really cool.
Well said, absolutely.
And certainly comes through in the movie.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much for talking with me.
Hey, thanks for having us. We really appreciate it.
I've been speaking with Emmanuel Sharinian and Michael D. Cohen, whose new feature, It Was You, Charlie, opens today in Toronto at the TIFF Bell Lightbox. This is Daniel Garber, the movies for CIUT 89.5 FM, and on my website, Cultural Mining.com.